You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, new advances in diabetes research. Two groups are reporting progress in treating diabetes, at least in mice. Researchers in France say the hormone apelin can lower blood sugar in mice. Apelin is a natural occurring hormone put out by fat cells, and it's found in both mice and humans. In another study, researchers made a synthetic protein modeled after an ingredient found in red wine, resveratrol. And when they injected it into mice, they found it warded off both weight gain, improved exercise endurance, and lowered insulin resistance in the mice. Both of these groups report their findings in a recent issue of the journal Cell Metabolism. So how or do these findings translate to humans? An estimated 246 million adults worldwide suffer from diabetes, mostly type 2 diabetes. Joining me now to talk more about it is my guest, C. Ronald Kahn. He is the Iacocca Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School and also the Vice Chairman of the Board and Section Head of the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. Thanks for talking with us today, Dr. Kahn.
Glad to be here, Ira.
Both of these new reports relate fat and diabetes and give us a little more insight on the relationship between the two. Are we finding out that we have a lot more to learn about diabetes here?
Oh, there's actually very good news on that front. There is a lot more to learn about, particularly about what causes type 2 diabetes and this problem of insulin resistance. As you commented, that many people with diabetes actually make insulin, but their tissues don't normally respond to it. And both these articles, as well as a lot of other research, is trying to address that problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the two separate. Let's talk about the apelin. It's a hormone, right?
Right. What we've learned both in this study and in several studies that preceded this study is that we used to think about fat as just a kind of a storage depot for extra calories when we didn't have a chance to eat. But it turns out that fat is a very active tissue, and it's actually making a number of different hormones that affect metabolism.
Mm-hmm. And what does the fat do? It puts out this hormone?
So fat releases these different hormones. Apelin is one of them. Another one is called leptin. Another one is called adiponectin. And different fat stores make different amounts of these different hormones. As you know, obesity is particularly bad when it's intra-abdominal, when it's called apple-shaped obesity or central obesity. And some of these hormones are made at higher levels by that intra-abdominal fat and some made more by subcutaneous fat.
Mm-hmm. And the researchers found that apelin helped to move glucose into cells just like insulin does.
Right. So apelin is one of the good fat hormones or adipokines. Another one that's generally good on metabolism is called adiponectin, and it also comes out of fat and stimulates metabolism more in the liver. Apelin seems to work more on the muscle.
And so could apelin be taking over when the insulin isn't working?
So we believe that these adipose hormones like apelin have and adiponectin and the other one, leptin, all have kind of long-term effects. Insulin works more in the short term. It more responds to individual meals and feeding, short periods of feeding and fasting, whereas these fat cell hormones seem to more respond to bigger changes in body weight over longer periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And the other compound is modeled on a molecule found in red wine. We've heard a lot about it over many years, resveratrol. It's the one we hear that protects, you know, from heart disease, why you should be drinking a glass or two of wine every day.
Right.
And what is happening there?
Well, what's exciting in this particular area is that the class of molecules that are the cellular targets of resveratrol is a new kind of group of intracellular regulators. They're called sirtuin proteins, or SIRT for short, SIRT 1, 2, 3, 4. There's a whole family of these. And what's being learned is that these are important controllers of metabolism and even aging. And if we can find drugs that will either activate or inhibit different sirtuins, we may have approaches to diseases like diabetes, obesity, and perhaps even other important diseases.
Mm-hmm. Is this an opportunity to make a lot of the resveratrol, or to find out the mechanism by which it works?
Well,
go in that direction.
Yeah, I think that the The idea is, and this is actually in part based on work by an academic lab, but it was in collaboration with a biotechnology company, Certris Pharmaceuticals, that is interested actually in making small molecules that could be orally absorbed that would actually stimulate one member of the sirtuin family called SIRT1, which appears to have very beneficial effects on metabolism, and that's what this story is about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can imagine the headlines, and you can see some of them already, saying things like, Apelin to save diabetics, you know, they just go get some, and you don't need to take insulin anymore. Would that be over the top or something more true?
Well, I think eventually we will find new drugs in both categories of adipokines, that is the fat cell hormones, and in the sirtuin activators and inhibitors. Of course, it's still early to know what the long-term effects of this would be, how's the best way to give them, what are the very most important targets and tissues to be acted upon. But I think that this is actually, both of these areas are exciting developments for the future.
Mm-hmm. In researching this, we Googled Apelin and see that it's known as a cardiac hormone. So even if we're to give people this hormone and reduce their blood sugar levels, do we know how it's going to affect the heart?
I don't think we do. And in fact, that is one of the reasons that I would call these kind of early, particularly the Apelin story, is a molecule that we still don't know a lot about. And many of these molecules may have beneficial effects on other tissues, but may also have some detrimental effects. So we need to find what is the full series of effects to decide whether these are going to be good therapeutic or therapeutic alternatives.
Mm-hmm. So the take home on that would be, don't wait for all this to develop out. Do something now on your own.
Well, I think that the take home is, yeah, we still have things we can do now, and both the current pharmacological therapies we have for diabetes, but also, of course, for type 2 diabetes, so much is involved with lifestyle, keeping your weight down, keeping active, and these are very important modifiers of the disease.
Mm-hmm. We've been hearing more and more about something called metabolic syndrome.
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
Well, metabolic syndrome is actually a clinical cluster of diseases that seem to kind of come together. Diabetes, central obesity, the tendency to hypertension, accelerated atherosclerosis, fatty liver, even gallstones, diseases also like Alzheimer's disease and polycystic ovarian disease are also related. And all of these diseases cluster around the fact that all of these diseases have, as part of their problem, insulin resistance. That is, the tissues of the body don't fully respond to the hormone insulin, which is the normal hormone that controls glucose and metabolism. So these are insulin-resistant states, and there are different levels of insulin resistance in different tissues and different diseases, but all of them kind of come together in this cluster of metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Would any of the research we were talking about today apply to the severe cases, the type 1 cases of diabetes?
Well, it's not likely that either of these approaches are going to be the answer for type 1 diabetes. For type 1 diabetes, we're dealing with a disease where the insulin-producing cells have been destroyed by an autoimmune process. And so our goal is not only initially to replace insulin by injection, but eventually to develop either transplant or genetic therapies to actually restore insulin secretion. But there we have to deal first with the immune response, which is destroying the insulin-producing cells. In type 2 diabetes, we have a different problem. The body makes insulin, but the tissues don't respond to it. The body tries to make more insulin. It can't make enough more to overcome this. So there's a problem of both making enough insulin, but also this problem of insulin resistance that is really needs to be addressed in treating type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And how soon might we expect to see this mice research trickle down into the human?
Well, I believe that with drugs like in the class of the sirtuin activators, these are already in early-stage human clinical trials. And so I think that we're going to know over the next few years whether either the particular compound that was mentioned in this article or others like it will have beneficial effects on metabolism. I think with Apelin, with the adipose hormones like apelin, there's a bigger challenge because these are protein or peptide hormones. These would probably have to be given by injection, whereas the sirtuin activators could potentially be given orally. In fact, they are given orally. So I think that there's, of course, going to be more rapid acceptance if we can find oral therapies, but injectable therapies also would be acceptable if they really work.
Do you think that people should expect to just continue, if they have their diabetic type 2, their lifestyles, and say, when these drugs are available, I'm just going to, you know, take these drugs, or do they still have to change their lifestyle?
Well, I think it's very important for anybody who currently has type 2 diabetes or people who are at high risk to be addressing the problem now and not wait for the future. If you've got diabetes, we know that all the long-term complications on vascular tissues that lead to amputations, blindness, kidney disease, all of these complications are representing cumulative damage over time from abnormal metabolism. And the sooner the diabetes is under control, the better it's under control, generally the better the outcome. With people even who are at risk for developing diabetes, we know that lifestyle changes like keeping your body weight down by diet and exercise makes a huge difference in your ultimate risk of ever getting the disease. So I don't tell people to wait. I tell them to attack the problem now.
And how much of this is hereditary, type 2 diabetes?
Type 2 diabetes has a very strong hereditary component. It's actually, though, what we call a polygenic disease. That is, it's not one gene that you're inheriting, but probably a cluster. In fact, now there are as many as 20 different genes that have been identified to contribute each a small amount to type 2 diabetes. So the problem with this is that many of us have some of these genes. Very few people have none, and very few people have all, but there's a lot of them that are very common. So I think we're going to, while the genetics are interesting from a medical research perspective, right now we have to deal more with the environment, which we can control.
Talking with Dr. Ronald Kahn on this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, talking about diabetes. We did a segment a while back in the show talking where the first human genome with a cancer patient was identified. And they compared it to they took some genes out of her tumor and some out of her skin cells and found the exact differences in those genes that might have caused the cancer. Do we know enough about the exact genes of diabetes too, that this might help or might not help or not might not be needed?
Well, I think for diabetes, it's going to be it has some similarities with cancer in that cancer is often multiple genes and diabetes is often multiple genes. But in cancer, what we have are real mutations in genes, that is, something that really turns them on or off in a very dramatic way. Probably in diabetes, we have what we call quantitative traits, that is, a quantitative difference in a gene. It might be on a little bit more or on a little bit less or a little bit more active. So it's going to be a much more subtle genetic effect. I don't think yet we're at a point, although you can now go on and buy a test for diabetes genes. You can order, you know, send some blood or DNA and get a test for it. I don't actually think that they're going to help at this point decide yet quite what to do about therapy. We do know that certain kinds of therapy responses are also genetically controlled, and eventually this will make a big difference, even in diabetes, to know which therapies you're most likely to respond to.
One last question from Laura Geinold in Second Life. Does red grape juice work?
Is red grape juice? Well, yeah, there's nothing about the alcohol in red wine that's essential. And at least for this particular compound, resveratrol that's been talked about, it is more in the Pinot Noir grape. So if you're going to get grape juice, I guess you should look for Pinot Noir. But it would take a heck of a lot of grape juice to get this active compound. It's going to probably take something more developed as a pharmaceutical agent to get you what you need.
Something that's a lot more concentrated.
More concentrated and more powerful. Yeah.
More powerful. And the drug companies are working on that stuff.
Yes, they are.
Several, actually. Dr. Kahn, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
And good luck to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Mal. Bye-bye.
Dr. C. Ronald Kahn is the Mary K. Iacocca Professor of Medicine at Harvard Med School, also the Vice Chairman of the Board and Section Head of the Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. That's about all the time we have this weekend. Before we go, I want to leave you with a personal note. Today is the last day our technical director, Josh Rogerson, will be sitting at the controls here in New York. He is departing this program as part of the large layoffs that have beset NPR. And while it would be easy to treat his firing as just one of the dozens of unfortunate employees, it would not be fair to him or to Science Friday to do so, because Josh has been an integral part of our family here in New York. His unique talents, his enthusiasm, and his sense of humor will be sorely missed, and we wish him good luck. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarian Kim Wileski. If you have comments or questions, write to us at Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, if you missed our pick of the week, our pick of the week is up there. It's some great nanotechnology, and you want to take a look at it. We talked about it earlier today. You can also serve over to our website there and see there. You can leave us email at sciencefriday.com. And also, we're podcasting and blogging and Twittering. Our Twitter is at SciFry if you'd like to follow us and send us some tweets. And also, we have all kinds of the links we talked about today in case you missed them. Also, do send us your videos. We do put up our video pick of the week, but we'd like to see some of your videos, and we might put up some of those videos and create a Science Friday social community. If you have any ideas about that, we'd love to hear from you. We're always looking for music to use in videos. We'd love to hear your music also. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.